Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete. What's
up? On The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that have come out this week. So let's get into it. Kicking it off with
Ghost
Rider. More
comics, as I always say.
We don't need to check in with each other because we know what's up.
We're locked
in. We're just getting into the comics. I'm doing fine.
Me too.
Good.
Yay. All three of us are doing great. Ghost Rider Final Vengeance, number one from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Danny Kim. In this title, the Ghost Rider, the spirit of vengeance, has left, I don't know, Danny Ketch, Jenny Blaze, one of those guys, and is moving on
Johnny
to try to find a new
it's
host.
JB.
Here's the thing. I really thought it was Danny Ketch. I don't know the difference between the two of them. Anyway, following Zarathos. I should stop talking about this.
I like the guessing.
I love it when you guess.
This is my first time reading comics, so there you go. Anyway, the spirit is traveling a bunch of places in Zarathos.
And he leaves Johnny Blaze in a real spider tunnel situation.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And ends up in a new host, which was spoiled because we get to know comics months in advance. So we already kind of know what the end of the issue is. But I'll tell you what, I was shocked at how hard and horrific this issue went. Ooh. Because I kind of expected, let me get the spoiler out of the way, just because people know it already. But the Hood is going to be the new spirit of vengeance.
Spoilers.
This issue is spent eventually working up to that point. So I spent the entire issue kind of being like, okay, we're going to get to the Hood. We know we're going to get to the Hood. But things got so horrible with the Ghost Rider spirit. I was ultimately very impressed by the directions this book went in.
Oh,
I agree.
Great.
Yeah, go ahead, Pete. Fire.
I do. Speaking of fire, I mean, there are epic fire panels in this. I mean, there is just epic art, fantastic Ghost Rider moments where you get to really see and feel his power. There's heat coming off these panels. Yeah, this is just like, it's almost a relief to kind of get to what the Zalbatron was saying, because we go through this kind of thing where the Ghost Rider leaves JB and is just all over the world, taking over evil moms, doing crazy things, and you're almost like, oh, thank God, settled in the Red Hood. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute, this is a horrible idea. But
just the Hood. color agnostic.
That's true. It's a good point.
He does have a red cape.
It's technically.
He's not precious about it. Yeah. He's just like, he's emphasizing.
Regardless of how close it is to the holidays, it's just the Hood. Anyways, I just feel that like, I was like, oh, what a crazy landing point. I didn't have the spoilers ahead of time. Out of all the places to go, that seems kind of insane. But it's nice to kind of know and then have the jumping on point for the next issue. I just feel like, this was a real epic Ghost Rider issue with a lot of different things going down all at once.
There was a lot happening here. I liked a lot. I liked the jumping around. It was a pleasant surprise to land, and then to land where it landed. It is strange to me. The whole thing with Ghost Rider is the spirit of vengeance is like, I want to burn. I want to stare at someone and make them die.
Yeah, pun stare.
Which, you know, Johnny Blaze, Danny Ketch, they're all like, let's be nice. Let's do nice things. Let's join the new Fantastic Four, for instance. Feels like the Hood is just like, that's evil on evil. Oops, all evil.
Oops, all evil.
Well, we'll see how that plays out, but I like that concept, and I like the idea of dealing with the contradiction you're talking about. Of you have a demonic spirit who works for Mephisto going around and blowing people's faces off and being like, this is a good guy. Hooray. What happens if you attach that to a bad guy? How far can it go and how bad can it get? And it goes basically apocalyptic in this issue. I thought that was great. Pete, you've raised your hand here on Zoom. What can I help you with?
Yeah, I just had a quick question. Do you guys feel that the Spirit of Vengeance talked about Mephisto way too much in this comic?
Definitely name checked, but it's sort of like my boss. Like, my boss is on my ass all the time making me do this stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate the generic, you know what I mean? Because that way I can live in the space.
You just hate Mephisto.
I have a boss. Sure, yeah. Mephisto is very triggering for me.
I guess you're pretty pisto at Mephisto.
Agreed. I just was wondering if maybe somebody else.
I always say.
And if you're out there, pisto at Mephisto, please hit us up on x.com with your comment.
Talk to loved ones about it because, you know, don't let that build up.
Hey, when you talk to your loved ones, especially if they're your clinical psychologist, definitely use the phrase pisto at Mephisto when you're talking about your deeper issues. I wanted to say real quick, what was your favorite vehicle and Spirit of Vengeance host? Was it Surfer on Surfboard?
Was it
Tractor and presumably Farmer?
That's insane to me that you were like Surfer on Surfboard when there was quite clearly a Ghost Rider shark.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, Alex. I was going to bring that up next. Is the shark the vehicle and one of those little clownfish the Spirit of Vengeance? What's the deal? Because I think it's a vehicle and a spirit. I feel like it's clownfish riding shark.
But when a shark is, you know, its own vehicle.
Wait, Ghost Rider, Final Vengeance.
Really?
Good. Did you need three weights before you got to that? You said three weights.
I just didn't want anybody to talk over me when I put that out.
I hate to ruin that bit.
Pete, what were you going to say? Something about the shark?
I don't know now. My brain got wiped by that stupid bit.
Have you ever used a shark as a vehicle?
Well, I tell you what, I would if I could. You know what I mean?
Yeah. A lot of people want to swim with dolphins. I want to ride a shark.
Yeah, I want the real deal.
Who's really riding sharks, though, creatively, I would say, is the team behind Helen of Windhorn number one from Dark Horse Comics.
Isn't that your favorite pick of the week?
Hold on. On our live show, at the end of our live show, we talk about books that are coming up. I talk about some books I'm interested in checking out, whether I think they're good or not, that I am hyped for. Because that's what we've done for 17 years.
So I'm kind of
stuck with that. Pete, on the other hand, you talk about books you've read that you've liked.
We're different. Hang on, I just got a notification that I can leave this meeting. I'll see you later.
Who sent that notification?
Mephisto. Hey, Helena Windhorn number one from Knock Knock Comics. What did you just say?
I said, hey, numbnuts. When we were on our live show, you made it seem like, sorry if I inferred too much, but it made it seem like
I've done the same thing on every show for a week for 17 years. I have not changed.
Let me get this straight. You think I've just been in a coma this whole time, and it was the first time I paid attention was this week?
I will say your primary care practitioner did tell us that Pete has awakened from a coma this week, and so we're very excited for you.
Yeah, I just got a notification to meet the new Pete. About that.
Yeah.
Helen of Windhorn, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Tom King, art by Bill Quisivelly. This is the team behind Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, coming back together. The idea behind this is that a woman named Helen has been called back to her ancestral manor after her father dies. Again, this is spoilers, but they've already talked pretty publicly about the concept. They've talked about it being a little bit Conan the Barbarian meets Chronicles of Narnia. And the idea here is that her grandfather wrote a bunch of adventure fantasy novels, and all of them are probably, in fact, real, which we start to encounter by the end of the book. So, what'd you guys think about this one? Do you think it held up to the high standard of Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow? Pete!
Well, I don't know about held up to that, but I do think this is an amazing team, and this checks all my boxes. You've got a badass old lady. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yum, 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 says New Pete.
I don't know about all the yums, but I just think it's a very interesting premise. Amazing monsters in action.
Hey, Peter, you were a little Helen of Wind horny about this book.
Yes. Nope. I saw that happening in your brain also, Alex, while you were... Squeak! Helen of Wind horny.
I'm going to go back into a coma.
It's better that way. Anyway, finish what you were saying, Pete.
I was done. I just thought it was a great package.
I mean, this is Conan the Barbarian meets Chronicles of Narnia. I say Conan the Smellier meets The Lion, the Witch, and the Wine Cellar. Ooh, you know what I'm talking about? Because this is about a woman who likes to
get know what you're talking about.
Get a bottle of wine and chill. Yeah. But this also strikes me as very much a inheritor of the previous series, the Supergirl series, like similar sort of pairing, the two characters who are one narrating the sort of the protagonist is not narrating, but they're just being talked about, doing a lot of things that maybe need to change or about to embark on a large journey. It very much seems like beautiful art. Fun world. I'm definitely into this.
Well, let me ask you something, because how crazy would you think? So if I came over to your wine cellar, Justin, and dropped a bottle of wine and then just started chugging it, would you be concerned, or would you just be like, oh, that's something people do?
Not to interrupt, but what she actually does in the book is she takes the bottle of wine, she smashes the neck of the bottle and then drinks out of it. I was so worried about her. That is a raggedy, broken glass bottle that she stuck in her mouth. She is cutting up those lips.
But she seemed to know what she's doing. It's like, have you ever seen someone take a sword and run it on across a champagne bottle and burst it that way?
Sure.
All right, fair enough. I thought this was phenomenal. It's cool. The art, of course, by Bilquis Evely is absolutely stunning throughout. The characterizations were so specific and so good. The creatures and fantasy elements that she creates and that are slowly parsed out throughout the book are great as well. We spent a lot of the book exploring this mansion, which could be, frankly, visually boring or repetitive, and it's not at all.
Yeah,
you do
feels expansive.
Yeah, it feels expensive. You feel like you're exploring this Byzantine mansion with these characters. This is great. I was very hyped about this going.
So you did like it.
And I matched up to the hype.
And just be real quick, Pete, if you show up in Wyatt.
All that, and you still liked
because
it.
Because here's the thing. And I mean this legitimately. When we are talking about things on the live show, I do it from the perspective of what did I think going in. Because we are taping that on Tuesday night before these comic books come out. So that's sometimes my opinions change.
What a peek behind the curtain. Pete, just so you know, I would love to find you in my wine cellar, my cheese cave, my cognac hutch, or my tequila bathroom.
And
anyone.
I can break and guzzle anything I want.
Yep, that's what I'm talking about. Be careful with the toilet, because that's full of pee and poop.
Yeah, you can break anything you want in Justin's Italian restaurant. Moving on to Suicide Squad. Dream Team number one from DC Comics.
Another one of your
Nicole
favorites.
Maids, art by Eddie Browse. I guess we'll see again. I was hyped for it beforehand. We'll see how it turns out when I talk about it. I love this book. I thought this was really cool. No, I really did. This is Nicole Maines taking the character Dreamer that she played on TV. She's already written her in a bunch of short stories and backup stories. We've also gotten a graphic novel as well. This is the first time she's getting I don't think it's an ongoing series. I think it's a mini series in the DCU.
Yes.
It's also a cornerstone leading up to the Absolute Power event that's happening later on this summer as Dreamer, per the title, is recruited to lead the Suicide Squad on a deadly mission. I thought this was really well done. I like the evolution of Dreamer's powers that happened throughout this book. Her relationship with Harley is really interesting. And this does pay off on the idea of being a stepping stone to this event. There's some really crucial information in terms of what's going on with Amanda Waller and her overall plan. I thought this was great. I was very impressed by this book. And Eddie Barrows, of course, draws really good superhero art. So good stuff there as well.
Agree. Great art. I like, you know, we've gotten a lot of Amanda Waller, the Wolverine of the DC Universe these days.
You overuse the word the Wolverine of.
No, those are two words. Also, I say there's a space Wolverine in the DC Universe, but it's not Wolverine up.
Yeah, Amanda Waller is kind of like the ground Wolverine, I would say.
Space Wolverine. Honestly, Pete, you should like it because the heights are similar, you know?
Okay.
She could throw a bub out there any minute. I think we've seen so much of Amanda Waller, but I think in this book, it feels like this actually is the springboard, and it doesn't feel like it's just some Amanda Waller like wallpaper setting up something that isn't actually going directly anywhere. This feels like it is the path. I really like Dreamer's power set. I feel like and a great use of a Suicide Squad. We've seen so much so often, but this feels like a more interesting team than normal. Clock King, I'm like, why you need him?
Yeah,
but he's a fun presence.
Probably.
Yes, right. Because his powers are being organized, I believe. So I don't know how he's going to do in like a hot zone drop mission where he's like, where are we going? He like knows the trains in Gotham. So like, I don't know.
Well, I think this was, first off, the art style is really cool and different. It has like a nice noir feel to it, which I thought was really great. I am a little worried about Waller in this. Seems pretty intense.
Ground Wolverine is what we're calling
it. I'm not going to call her that. But seeing Dreamer and Harley team up is very exciting. So I think this is a good package.
Black Widow and Hawkeye, number one from Marvel, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Paolo Villanelli. This is celebrating the 60th anniversary of these characters with a front story that is embroiling Hawkeye in a mystery where Black Widow may have to get him out of it. Then we get a little bit of a backup story with their original incarnations and old costumes as well. What'd you guys think about this one?
How are you celebrating 60 years of Hawkeye and Black Widow?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, that's the costume anniversary. I don't know. I'll look it up.
Nice. Good. That's close to retirement, really. I thought this was great. I sort of like this symbiote Black Widow.
Really?
How
I don't
do you
know.
Guys?
I felt like her controlling like spiders was a little weird. But I thought the suit looked good, and I thought that was kind of cool. But I was just like, I don't know how I feel about you having little symbiote spiders that you control.
I just feel like it's rare for me to go into like sort of an event about a character where the continuity doesn't feel tacked on. And the symbiote suit is definitely just like what's happening with her right now. But it feels very germane to this. It feels like a part of it. It feels like it's really – the character is that right now fully in this series, and that's good. And they're able to still shift the focus to Hawkeye, who is the character of mystery here, which I thought was
well
done.
Don't you think that, like, all right, Venom has been fighting Spider-Man for evs, and all of a sudden Venom is being Black Widow, and now there's spiders? You know what I mean? Like, you don't think that's a little...
She is a spider in her name.
Right.
No, I know that. That's why they're doing
this.
Is your problem, this is the, in your opinion, the first time there has been a symbiote other than Venom in Marvel Comics? Is that your issue?
No, that's not my issue at all.
I don't love Black Widow being a symbiote, but it 100% is like, oh, Black Widow, what if she actually had like a Spider-Man title costume that's 100%.
What if she had minion spiders that she can control?
Yeah. Well, but what I like about it feels very like on the character. She's like, the symbiote is an asset. I think she uses that exact language. And that's like I guess. So she's like using it to her advantage in her job.
I do kind of hope, though, that this miniseries strips her of the symbiote suit, because part of the thing that I think is interesting about Black Widow and Hawkeye being teamed up, which they dealt with a lot of the movies, but the fact that they're like, we are two regular humans.
Just regular ass people.
Who are
thrown
in this
insane
superhero world. We're both very talented, but we have no superheroes. And in fact, what I think Stephanie Phillips does really nicely here is lead into the hearing impaired how Hawkeye is hearing impaired. She plays with that a bit. That's something that's part and parcel with this character that I think people forget a lot. So
yeah,
good stuff there. I don't know. I like this issue. I thought it was a solid issue, but I want to read more before.
I thought it was a great issue. I'm very excited to see what's going to happen. I think the art is really cool. I like these two together. I just think I was a little thrown by the little minion spiders, but I'm very excited to see
because they kept
happens.
Looking for Donna Na, right?
Nope. No.
You never miss an opportunity.
Never. Not once.
Dress for the job you want. And if that's in a symbiote suit, that's what you want.
I Heart Skull Crusher, number one for Boom Box, written by Jesse Campbell, art by Alessio Zano. This is following a young girl who loves nothing more than, what is it called, Murder Death Ball? I'm forgetting the exact name. But she lives in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. She wants to be part of the most popular, most dangerous sport in the land. And she will stop at nothing to get the chance to meet her hero, Skull Crusher. I love this book. I thought the art is very clearly manga influenced throughout. The big character time. Also is very much, I'm going to be the absolute best at this sport. Here we go, which is very much a manga trope. So if you like that sort of thing, I think you'll be into it. But all of the character designs are very clear and very fun. I love seeing this character build up her team to win this contest. I just had a blast reading this book.
Yeah, agreed. I love the anime manga style. I think it's really fun and pops really coolly on this page. Fun over-the-top expressions and facial stuff. This is just a blast. It's jumping off the page at you in such a fun, cool, exciting way. Love the world. Love the characters. Love all the action. I think this is a fun post-apocalyptic ride.
Screaming Painball. Is the sport.
Screaming Painball.
Screaming Painball.
And what fun to play. This reminded me a little bit of a book we're going to talk about later on called I Hate Fairyland.
Oh, interesting.
In the sort of vibe of our main character who is just like all
That's
go,
a great
no
connection.
Stop. And I really enjoyed the last panel of this. So I'm curious to see what the next step is because this story could go literally anywhere, I feel like.
Transformers number 6 from Image Comics by Daniel Warren Johnson. This is the final issue that Daniel Warren Johnson is both writing and drawing going forward. He's just going to be doing writing. Juan Gedeon is taking the art. This is apparently news to Pete.
Pete Coma coming, oncoming Coma.
But this is going to shock you. Just I want everybody, if you're listening to the podcast, please sit down because this is going to stun and I think surprise you, in this issue, the Autobots are fighting the Decepticons.
Yeah, and they're the bad ones.
The Decepticons are the bad guys. The Autobots are the good guys. And Optimus Prime, who's kind of down a little bit.
Hey, stop being
comes
a dick.
Back and really rallies the good guys in this issue.
Shut up.
Yeah, what's up?
Wait, I just have one thing to say. Before Pete, before you go, I just have a question.
Yeah, what's up?
It's funny, the Decepticons,
raise your hand if you have a question, you numbnuts.
Sorry, I'm not actually in elementary school. I'm a grown-up.
We're on a Zoom call, you dick. There's protocols here.
The way... are the protocols friends with the Autobots? They would be a great team-up. Isn't it the Decepticons inherently deceptive? It's right in their name. Autobots are being just as sneaky because they're turning into cars too.
Wow. Really?
You ever thought about that, Pete?
Is that really what you were going to say?
I think they should be the Decepticons or the Auto Sneaks. That's what I think they should be called. The Auto Sneaks.
The Auto Sneaks.
That's really good notes. Those are some good notes.
All right. First off, so he's going to keep writing, but you can't do both, is what you're saying.
Daniel Warren Johnson is going to be writing at least the next 6 issues of Transformers while Juan Gedeon takes over art. After that, TBD, but most likely he's leaving the title with issue number 12.
Wow. Okay.
But how about the way this... I want to say, I mean, Daniel Warren Johnson's art is unbelievable. His use... of or the way that he creates a soundscape in this comic is wild.
The onomatopoeias are just unbelievable.
There's so much language that elicits sound, but also there's just so much smashing that is very fun. It's, again, very emotional. Well, Optimus Prime gets wrecked in a way where I was like, yo, this car's just done. Put this guy in the junkyard. Truck daddy's going to bed.
Take it easy with the truck daddy stuff.
But hold on, I'm not quite done yet. There's a character that makes an interesting, very sad choice here that I thought was very well done. Amazing that the technology works that way. I have some questions about that.
Can we talk about that for a second?
No, not yet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me just finish. And the way that certain parts of characters are ripped off, I was like, I'm a kid again. It was like watching like someone accidentally tear the arm off your favorite toy. I was like, yo, that's not how you handle that, my guy.
Okay, so first off, I just wanted to say that this has happened before where Daniel Warren Johnson sometimes he writes and draws, but sometimes he just writes. So I'm not worried about quality going down or anything like that.
You're literally talking to yourself right now.
I am talking to myself. Both you assholes don't give a shit about what
you're
going
to listen to. Here, let's clip this out.
So it's weird. This section got one listener.
Yeah.
So everyone else tuned out. Just Pete's going to listen. This is like Pete's Ted Lasso.
I'm just trying to talk myself off the ledge a little bit.
I'm
okay. It's okay. It's just been really amazing to have them be doing both, but it's fine. It's fine. I'm sure it won't change the quality at all, so going forward it'll be great.
Wow, I've never seen someone fall apart immediately.
I mean, what's amazing is I have seen this a million times. Optimus Prime getting his ass kicked, and then something happens, he turns it around, and it just doesn't get old when it's done well.
Well, let me ask you, Pete, does he always eat humans? Is that his thing?
We were going to get to it in a second. We were going to get to it in a second. When I was done.
He's hungry. He's hungry for people now, I think.
He's got the taste.
He's trying to just work through
this. He's got the taste for human.
He's trying to work through this, and then we can deal with it.
Optimus Prime rib. Am I right?
Oh, my God. All right.
Doesn't quite make sense, but Pete, finish it.
I don't know. Keep going, Pete.
No, it doesn't matter anymore.
Okay, so let's talk about this moment that happens here. So Optimus Prime is like, I'm going to die. I'm about to die. Take my heart, my Energon heart, and use it to fight on beyond me. And then Spike's father is like, I know how to save you. Use my energy, and walks into his Energon heart. And that gives Optimus Prime enough energy to be like, yes, I can fight on. And I can beat the Decepticons. To your point, I know you were joking about it, but also, is this new? Is this a new wrinkle?
Yes,
that
definitely.
Energon is humans? Like, is that somebody's going to run out?
Never been
like,
humans. It's been energy, but his all spark has gone out, faded a bunch of times. He's done that thing where he takes out, he's like, you know what? You carry on my legacy. I got to die.
He does that a lot.
I got to tell you, and this is, mind you, Daniel Warren Johnson, I'm just couching this for Pete specifically, way more talented than me. But we talked to him, and he was like, when you have something happening, when you think like you should kill a character, he was talking about the death of Bumblebee in the first issue, I want to say.
Right.
Kill Bumblebee. I thought he was going to kill Optimus Prime in this issue, and I think he should have. Honestly.
No, really? Optimus Prime dies all the time.
I think he should have. I think Optimus Prime should have died. They use the energy to create, I don't know, Rodimus Prime or whatever they're going to do. Like
someone else.
Transformer stuff. But the idea of being like, well, we can suck up humans now and use them to power ourselves up. That's a weird twist that they have to play with in some way.
And I am curious because if the Decepticons figure that out, they're going to.
Yeah, we're in trouble.
Let me ask you, though. Does this mean, can I throw a couple fingers in my gas tank? And just drive around?
Yeah, man. 100%. fingers, that, teeth, whatever you want to do.
Oh, teeth. I got a lot of those. Baby teeth?
Baby teeth, 100%. I got not a as lot much of my power old baby as teeth. Adult teeth, Ben.
Okay. For well, sure. I'm going to go through my baby teeth before I start pulling out my own teeth.
Yeah. I went by the BP the other day, and they had unleaded, and the next to that was mouth boats.
Okay. Yeah. Anyways, I just wanted to say that, like, yes, when I was reading this comic, it was insane to me that Spike's dad just walked in, you know, into Optimus's chest, and all of a sudden Optimus was like, I feel stronger. But I was having so much fun up to that point, I wasn't stopping to kind of deal with that. But it's nice that I get it slapped in my face right here live.
That's what we do. We'll take care of each other.
Yeah. But I would like to go back to the fun I was having before you guys ruined it. Optimus had Megatron's gun and then his own gun, and I had never seen that before, and that was unbelievable. And also, the way that Optimus talked to Soundwave and then, like, caught his punch like it was nothing was glorious and really awesome.
It's like they always say. It's like they always say in Transformers, two guns, each humans can't lose.
That is, I think that's in the movie.
That's never
been the original movie.
No.
Friday Night Headlights? I'm just going to keep going.
I kept trying to write.
I'm like, on a roll?
I kept trying to write something insane in my head, like, oh, maybe Spike's dad was, you know, made of energy this whole time. You know what I mean? Like, he was like an AI robot and didn't really exist or something. And I was working real hard. But I guess humans are made of energy. So, Energon.
Optimus Prime loves souls. He eats them for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. This was a great issue, despite the questions that we have. Beautifully drawn, very visceral.
That's now my concern, is that Daniel Warren Johnson wrote himself into a corner here and was like, fuck, Spike's dad just walks into his heart. I don't know. I maybe shouldn't draw and write at the same time.
No, that's definitely not the case. I respect the choice. I respect the move. It was very emotional. It led to an amazing last panel. Like, it's just funny to me that the idea that maybe if they actually take that forward, that any of these Transformers can eat humans, and that is like just it's like doing cocaine, essentially. Optimus was like, let's do this, motherfuckers. Like, he was back at the club, and so that's great, man. If that's where we're at.
Ultimate humans Black are the Panther. Cocaine of the universe.
Ultimate Black of Panther, humans.
Number two, White Gold. Ultimate Black Panther, number two from Marvel, written by Brian Hill, art by Stefano Caselli. In this issue, Black Panther T'Challa is still dealing with an invasion from the Moon Knight Nation, I guess, is going on here. We got a Khonshu.
Yeah, Khonshu sighting. He's just chilling.
And we have some big moves here in terms of T'Challa's relationship status as well. Tell you what, I was iffy about the first issue of this. I like the art and the writing, but it didn't feel like a big swing. I felt like we were getting more towards that in this issue.
This was awesome. I really think this found another gear. Really very cool kind of setup and premise. Love the last panel. Very nervous and excited about what that means moving forward. But yeah, I just thought this was really a badass ish. I love the art. It has like a clean kind of cool look to it. I just think it was fun to see Khonshu just kind of hanging out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. This definitely started to differentiate itself a little bit more. I'm a little the character that's revealed in the last panel. I'm curious how that affects maybe another book in this line, where I felt we were going to get a different take on this very character. Anybody else?
Well, the character you're talking about. What you're talking about. Don't spoil
I can it. Talk about it. No. It's not a spoiler because, again, they put it out there. But Storm is in this book. We saw her in the first issue, so it's fine. The character that we're going to see in Ultimate X-Men is called Maystorm, which is a character that Peach Momoko created, who is a protege of Storm. We don't know how that connects necessarily. We don't know how it's set up. But there you go. Two different things.
But we all know May is known for its storms, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
May storms bring June
bugs.
Bugs.
Bugs. Oh, man, that's horrible. I can't wait for that. What a nightmare season we have coming our way.
Buckle up. You know what's another nightmare is Batman Dylan Dog, from DC Comics. Written by Robert Recchione, art by Gigi Cavadaggio and Werther Daldaria. Now, of course, we know Batman. We, of course, know Dylan Dog.
We know, know one of these two main characters.
Every time I read this title, I was like, so that's a talking dog who solves mysteries, right? Turns out, he's not. He's not actually that. He is a nightmare detective, which is a detective who investigates nightmares and nightmare scenarios and dark supernatural things. I didn't know what to expect going into this. I thought it was very fun in terms of the mashup. I assume it's more fun if you know who Dylan Dog is, but what did you think, Pete?
Yeah, I felt like this was a great oversized issue here. Very cool art style, has a cool look to it. Love the colors and the tone, the vibe it creates. I think everybody's across the pond here. We get like some fun kind of versions of the Joker and Killer Croc and Catwoman and Joker's personal surgeon is there. And,
wait, I thought about you, Pete. What did you think about the fact that Catwoman was sleeping with Dylan Dog instead of Batman?
Yes, that dog.
I didn't appreciate that. I also thought it was pretty awkward between the two of them.
I have that Dylan Dog in me. That's what I mean. You know,
that's what I say that too.
I wish you
would. Wait, Alex, have you been sleeping with Dylan Dog?
That's what I mean. I said that's what I mean.
All that aside, I feel like this is an exciting issue. I'm excited to see what goes down or if there's going to be any more. But I felt like we got a lot of bang for our buck here.
So did Catwoman.
Beautiful art. Yeah, wow. Beautiful art, I thought, throughout this. And yeah, this was a fun story. It's funny how this story treated Batman like he was sort of like lame and treated Dylan Dog like he was cool. And I was like, oh, interesting. Because Dylan Dog is sort of talking shit the whole time. It's like, this Batman's square. He doesn't know what I'm doing. He's doing his own thing. I just was surprised by that take, but maybe this book was originally conceived more for Dylan Dog fans.
There you go. Dylan Dog fans, your time is here. Favorite. Sons of Star Trek.
The Dylan Dog Pound. Shouts to the Dylan Dog Pound, who we have a lot of folks.
Sons of Star Trek, number one from IDW, written by Morgan Hampton, art by Angel Hernandez. I think continuity-wise, this is spinning out of the current Star Trek series, but we're focusing on a bunch of the sons, per the title, over on the Deep Space Nine section of the universe in particular. We're getting Benjamin Sisko's son. We're getting Quark's son, I think. And also we're getting Worf's son, who became a villain during the Day of Blood crossover event. Not only that, but we're also getting Q Jr., QJ, who is showing up here. Woo! Dustin, you're a Star Trek fan. What'd you think of this one?
I like the twist of Q Jr. The idea that he takes the name Q Jr. is very funny to me. I definitely have questions on how Q have juniors, because I think maybe that's not really built for that. But I will say, I thought this was fun. It's a way to sort of spin the continuity out from the Day of Blood crossover and deal with that in a way that feels positive. I like how sort of Q Jr.'s like, you know the deal. I'm Q. Like, it's very much like not, it's treating the readers as people who know what's up, which I thought was a smart choice. And yeah, it's like you said, if you're a fan of Deep Space Nine, this is a particularly good spot to come in on this comic.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this before. The Sons of is kind of like a hot trend that's going around, but I think used well here. This is fun.
Where else?
There's the Sinister DC Sons of, the Sinister Sons later in the stack.
People are always saying, you're a son of a bitch.
Yeah. All over the place.
Since it's happening. You sons of bitches, people say to us.
Yeah.
Sinister Sons, Sons of Star Trek, and you sons of bitches. Yes. Okay, I guess that's three. That's a trend.
That's enough.
Dude, the fucking Super Sons, are you serious? There's been a bunch of Robin and fucking Superman's kid. They got very popular.
I mean, that was years ago, so.
Sons be living is what Pete's saying.
There are no sons anymore. We're in a Children of Men scenario, so I'm not quite sure what you're talking about.
We're sons.
Oh.
Never thought about that.
I haven't really thought about that. I like this. I thought this was fun. This is very much like hardcore Star Trek nerd fad cameos galore. Can you identify the character sort of thing? But if you're the wheelhouse for that, which I am, you'll have a good time. Nacelleverse number 0. This is coming out March 20th from OD Press, written by Melissa Flores, art by Ramat Handako, Rald Marcellius, Francis Portella, Diogenes Neves. This is, I don't think this is entirely fair to frame it this way, but I'll say this is kind of OD Press's attempt at like an Energon universe kickoff type thing. Except it's with biker mice from Mars, power lords, and a bunch of other characters that, frankly, you probably forgot existed. I say it's not entirely fair because I don't think that's actually what OD Press is going for. They're trying to go for, like, cool and weird things with a lot of the titles that they're doing lately. But this is a big kickoff of all of these titles. We're going to see miniseries spinning off of this. What'd you guys think?
Now, P, you're a biker mice from Mars guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, this comic really felt like, you know, the cartoon come to life here in a fun way. So, yeah, I definitely was watching biker mice for sure.
I mean, this felt like that.
This comic is I watched biker mice.
Well, it felt honestly, like.
It feels like there's a biker mouse from Mars holding a gun to your head. Is there a mouse that we need to know about, Pete, from Mars?
Is there a mouse behind you right now? Blink twice. Oh, my God, he did. He did it.
Yeah.
I mean, this felt like watching Saturday morning cartoons.
Yes.
Like 30 years ago. So, like, in that way, that's a success. It's just these are such weird, disparate ideas that are all together. So I think they did great.
That's what those cartoons were all like back then.
Yeah. Well, it'd be like if I was like, all right, here's what I'm doing. I'm linking Garfield, Captain Bucky O'Hare, Heathcliff. I mean, Garfield and Heathcliff, I can make a strong connection there.
Right.
You live in a house and you live in a dump. You're from different worlds.
I mean, to your point, I think like a lot of it depends on nostalgia. Is this and your knowledge base? Like, I don't know any of these characters, so I don't have any relationship to them. I thought the art was solid throughout. Melissa Flores is a really solid writer as well, so
yes.
She knows what she's doing in terms of connecting all of these stories. But the sort of thing that immediately I thought of, like, oh, if they did a Garfield U.S. Acres crossover with a bunch of other things, I'd be like, I'm there for it. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, and I think Biker Mice from Mars was a blatant Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles ripoff back in the day. I think that's just a known fact, right?
I think so. I mean, I'd love to see Biker Mice from Mars versus Battletoads. Did that ever happen?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was here for Battletoads.
Yep.
That was that was a game first and then an animated show later, right? What they did like
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember being obsessed with that game, but never playing it. Why don't we move on?
It was very difficult.
It was hard. I remember reading about it in Nintendo Power and being like, oh, I'm not actually going to play this. Petrolhead number 5 for Image Comics, written by Rob Williams, art by Rye Parr. In this issue, our main robot character is interacting with other robot characters. They talk about cars a lot, but they don't drive anywhere.
That's not true, you asshole. Don't even fucking say shit like that. They're driving all over the place in this issue, man.
No, they do drive a little bit.
They do jump. They jump. Jesus. They jump the cars. They don't drive.
First off, this is a glorious issue. Glorious. The art, the tone, the world it creates. It's amazing. It's fun. It's a post-apocalyptic race of epic proportions that I want to watch and be there for. The character designs are unbelievable. This has such a feel to it. It all drips off the page in such a cool, unique way. And yeah, I can't get enough of this goddamn. Every one of these issues, I absolutely love it.
I worry about just the carbon footprint of Petrolhead. It seems like a lot of the other characters have gone
electric.
Comic,
you numbnuts.
A lot of the other characters have gone electric, and he's really sticking to gas. Mm-hmm. It's just something.
He's got a petrol head, so.
Yeah, that's true. The art is very good in this, and I do like the story. Like, it is good. He is like Bender from Futurama. I can't get that out of my head. But maybe that's fun.
It's fine.
And then his Lego head friend really gets in trouble here.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you got a Lego head friend, they're going to get into trouble.
The Amazing Spider-Man number 45 from Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, art by Carmen Carnero. In this issue, we're dealing with the fallout from gang war and, a bunch of other fallouts as Spider-Man tries to help Mary Jane's aunt, who went crazy because of Krakoa drugs and was sent to... my brain is not working. I want to say Arkham Asylum, but that's not what it is.
Nope.
No.
Ravencroft. Ravencroft. So there's that. We're dealing with some Norman Osborn stuff. We're dealing with some Sandman stuff, Sinister Styx. Here's my question for you guys. Is Amazing Spider-Man good again? Because this felt like a actual Spider-Man issue. Peter Parker grappling with a lot of stuff, dealing with issues, some heat with Mary Jane as they're getting
changing clothes.
Ooh, good stuff. I like this issue.
I did too. And this feels like a type of Spider-Man issue we've read a lot over the years, where it's like in between events and we're just doing stuff. And I love those issues because we get just some nice character stuff. I really like Anna Watson in this issue, how she is sort of a wild storyline, but like, sure. And it's a good story here. I like the reveal of this upcoming villain, the Living Brain, which is crazy. You don't like it? The brain's too big.
I was just, the reveal of a giant brain. I was a little like, it's not.
You want a smaller brain or a regular size brain?
I don't know. Put some googly eyes on it or something. I mean, get me excited about something. It's just a brain.
You want a Krang, not a brain.
I want a Krang situation. Any kind of, even that Doom Patrol evil brain robot was more fun than this.
The brain?
Yes, thank you. I love the way you paused and leaned in on that. That was really nice. The art's great on this. I was excited about what happened in the woods scene that we cut away.
Wahapies.
Wahapies in the woods when people start to take off their clothes and then we cut away. I was like, come on, Zeb.
You think they hooked up?
I don't know what happened. Zeb didn't even fucking tease us.
You know what happens in the ramble in Central Park, right?
No, you fucking hobo, I don't. But I just think that this... was interesting. Had some interesting moments, but overall was a little. I was still
the Ramble was actually
stretching.
A very popular hookup location for gay men back when it was more of a controversial topic in New York. They would meet in the Ramble, which is a twisting, turning place in Central Park where there's a lot of pathways that you can hide out on, particularly at the night. As it has become more accepted in society, it has become less of a destination for that, but historically, that still remains.
Wow, thanks for
Wow, did you add that? You must have added that in post, because there's no yeah. way we would have just sat and listened to it.
Yeah, no. What I actually said was
a lecture.
Yeah.
It's true. I don't know if the Rambles is much of a hotspot these days, Alex.
Mm-hmm. No? Really? I believe what I said was, me, Helen of Wind Horny.
I knew you liked that book.
I did. All right. Why don't we move on and talk about Fables 162 from DC Comics, written by Bill Willingham, art by Mark Buckingham. This is, once again, the final issue of Fables, though this time maybe forever, given there's been a bunch of behind-the-scenes drama at DC with Bill Willingham. And in this, we're wrapping up the Black Forest storyline, one of my absolute favorite cakes, to be honest with you. But was it one of your favorite storylines? How did you feel about this potentially final forever, once again, issue of Fables?
Well, I feel like it wrapped up a little too quickly for my taste, especially because I agree with you. I think this will be the final, at least in this iteration. I liked the way it wrapped up. I like that Tinkerbell was a fucking badass at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah, man.
Great.
Tortured motherfuckers.
Great Bill Willingham type twist. And, you know, I love the Wolf family. They're great. It's nice to see them all. We get to see at least a very little bit about each of them. But, you know, I wish this was just continuing to go on and we could get way more of this.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this has just been such a, you know, tentpole, just unbelievable comic that really just artistically, storytelling-wise, it did so many amazing things. It's sad to see it end, even though this is, as Alex pointed out numerous times, the second time it's ending. I just feel that, like, just unbelievable use of characters that we know so well in such creative ways, and the artistry, the panels, the time and energy that goes into this book is really impressive. So it's sad to see it go, but man, what a badass way to go out with, you know, torturing, you know, the release of the giant fairy and all that kind of stuff. So great stuff. Felt rushed ending, but still sad to see it go.
You hate seeing it leave, but you love watching it go. Thundercats number 2 from Dynamite, written by Declan Shalvey, art by Drew Moss. In this issue, we're meeting a new Thundercat named Calica, who has discovered potential romantic interest for Lion-O. Pete, how are you feeling?
Well, as we all know, Calico Cat is a very fun breed of cat, so it'd be interesting to mix in.
Like, just to emphasize it, very fun breed. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Pete's our cat guy, and when he's talking fun breeds, give us the top 5 fun breeds real quick. Do you have a power ranking of top 5 breeds? You can take a breath. You can puff the fluff for a second.
Siamese.
Siamese number
long
1.
Long hair. Calico is definitely up there.
Yeah.
What
about the skinless ones? Oh, they're not skinless. They have fur. They're not skinless.
Skinless. That's creepy.
That's skin.
I don't know.
Other day I was at the supermarket, picked up some skinless, boneless cat.
Yum, yum.
But so in this issue, we have Lion-O has a bad dream. You know, him and Panthro still not seeing eye to eye, which hurts inside.
You hate to see.
But it's nice to see Skive, the evil kind of frog, having some fun and kicking some butt. So that was kind of cool. But then Panthro punches a tree, which I also didn't feel good about. I love the art. And, well, I think first off, Panthro... you know, should be better at getting his emotions in check. And
oh, really?
Because he does machines.
Yeah, because I'm talking. That's why I think that.
Were you rooting for the tree?
Yeah, I was. I wouldn't. You know, Panther rolling up on trees and just punching them isn't cool. A good look. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good to read. You know
when did you last punch a tree, Pete?
I don't know. It's been a while, buddy.
I feel like, Alex, you know,
you're trying to say that you saw Pete punch a tree who's a friend of yours or something.
I'm not saying, but LB is not doing that well. That's all.
Oh, LB.
Wow.
I like this, the way that Lion-O, that this detail that Lion-O was a kid who's aged up. I think it's such a nice little, because that's not canon, right? That's sort of for this book. That's really fun, and it creates a nice dynamic. That's why I think the Panthro relationship isn't going well.
Yeah.
Because Panther are old, sort of the Donatello of the group does machines. And I think he doesn't respect young Lion-O. Yeah. It does continue to bother me that the two young people are named Wile E. Cat and Wile E. Kit, when it should be something different than that.
Well, that's what it is from the cartoon, bro.
It should be different. That is not correct. That is just not the right name. Wile E. is the part that's different. They are all cats. Should be Cat. Mumra continues to be scary for some reason. I'm somehow scared of Mumra. I don't know why.
You should be, yeah. Mumra is very scary.
Yeah, but why am I scared? I read a lot of comics. I'm not scared of mummies. This is like a based on a sort of goofy cartoon. Why am I scared of Mumra?
Mumra is scary and was scary in the cartoon, bro. I'm sure you had some nightmares over it like a lot of us did.
Yeah, I don't know. Thumbs up.
The Wrong Earth, Dead Ringers, number one from Ahoy Comics, continue, written by Tom Payer, art by Jamal Igel. This is continuing the story.
Hey, Jamal Igel.
A 60s Batman stand-in and a more modern, darker Batman stand-in. We're getting a bunch of mix-em-ups with the universes going on here. I thought this was a really solid continuation of the series. What about you guys?
Yeah, agreed. The art's unbelievable. The couple fighting was a little kind of tough, but you know, then you just jump through a portal when you're covered in goo, and you know, you got to make the best of the new world that you find yourself in. You know what I mean?
What do you think, honey? That was.
I don't know. I mean, the bug was also covered in it, and that looked like a fly, so it could have been shit.
Wow.
Flies don't hang around honey as much as they do other things.
Yeah. You'll get more flies with honey than you will with shit.
With shit.
Jesus.
Pete's big fly agenda that he's coming out with.
This podcast is marked explicit.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Explicitly good reviews of this comic, Dead Ringers. I do like the way that this comic is really put a flag down. Like, no, we're going to do this very specific multiversal thing and really explore it to its fullest. Like, we've seen a lot of different versions of this. It sort of is using, you know, almost Miracle Man style continuity references where it's like, no, these are the specific things. Here's how we're moving through them. So it is fun. It is interesting. I'm curious what this particular comic is taking us on, the way that it sort of ends up.
What if
the art's really impressive?
Yeah. Jamal Igel.
Jamal Igel, our guy.
Yeah.
What if Venom number 2 from Marvel, written by Jeremy Holtz, art by Tatum Gyadu. The first issue saw She-Hulk becoming Venom, and this issue sees Wolverine becoming Venom through a series of circumstances. This is a little bit of an odd duck for me with the What If franchise, because it's more like, what if She-Hulk became Venom and then that caused Wolverine to become Venom versus here's how Wolverine became Venom. So I had to get past that a little bit, but overall I thought this was a solid story. I'm interested to follow this going forward, and I thought the art was solid as well.
Yeah, I feel like the cover gave it a little bit away, which is never as fun, but it's still a badass looking cover, so maybe it'll make people stop and buy it. But yeah, we got kind of a
Do you think that's why they do that?
I don't know. No one's ever thought about it before. So we have kind of like a Wolverine trapped in his mind and trapped in Weapon X and trapped in the Venom all at the same time. And then Venom's the Venom Wolverine's kind of out in the streets jumping on speeders, you know, really fighting crime to the fullest. So interesting setup, but the art's the real hero here.
And, you know, I think you make a good point, Alex, about it's sort of a different take and the fact that they're stringing these together. It reminds me a little bit more of the like the What If TV show, animated mm-hmm. show. Mm-hmm. Because really this plays almost in opposition to what What Ifs are. What Ifs are normally like taking a moment and then exploring it to its absolute fullest, to its a sort of vanishing point of like, these are all the repercussions of this story. And this one is sort of like, what if Wolverine was Venom for like a minute?
Yeah, mm-hmm. but what if Doctor Strange showed up at the end?
That's what I'm saying. And then what it's going to be like, I prefer What If that is like, let's see all of the, you know, butterfly effect ramifications of a different thing rather than this like, hey, Wolverine had a crazy weekend with goo.
Right. This is the sort of thing that mostly could happen in the mainstream Marvel universe versus a what if that is supposed to, like you're saying, Justin, take it to the logical extreme.
But I think when things are getting a little crazy and maybe muddy, when Doctor Strange shows up at the end, you're kind of like, all right, well, now things are going to start making more sense.
No, but they need to make less sense. That's the point. What if needs to Ooh. Go absolutely wild. But that's all right. I'm still having a nice time. The One Hand, number two from Image Comics, written by Ram V, art by Lawrence Campbell. This is a new mystery series. In this half, we're following a detective who's trying to track down a killer who has six fingers. There's also a title called... The Six Fingers. We're following that killer. What are you saying? What's going on?
My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepared to die. I'm looking for the six-fingered man.
You have anything to say about this book, Pete?
Oh, sure. I would love to talk about it. I think it's great art, cool tone. Crazy kind of world the detective is trying to work in here. He reminds me of Commissioner Gordon for some reason that I can't shake. But
he's a cop.
That's it.
But you don't think he looks like him a little bit?
He's got glasses.
I don't know. Kind of had a feel to it that made me kind of couldn't shake it. But yeah, Ram V is fantastic. Gamble's art's unbelievable, so I think this team is making me, you know, going to keep checking it out anyway. So I'm not sure all that's happening, but I'm having a great time.
Yeah, it's really moody. It's really noir-ish in a great way. I like the little visual clues that we're getting along the way and the sort of...
creepy pinky there, did you?
Yeah, we got a creepy pinky. We got an interesting... connection of the... No. The shape of the art matches some of the shapes that are being drawn on.
Yeah, cool how that was.
I really like that. And just the general tension that's being built around our cop character, both in his regular life and in the case. And it's all just boiling together. Really well paced, cool, like great art. And the synergy there is really nice.
Action Comics 1063 from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by John Timms. This is the third and final part of this Bizarro storyline that has found the entire world turning into Bizarros with only Superman left, or at least that's what he thought. We're also getting a Bizarro Joker. And of course, a Bizarro Joker is the most sane man in the world. Oh, so he's helping him out.
Man.
I think we all started... liking, but a little iffy about this in the first part. How did we feel about it by the end of the storyline?
I thought it landed it well. Like the twist, the Joker twist, and him being sort of almost the main character of this last issue, at least the emotional character, I thought was cool and well done. Really nice art throughout this whole thing. Definitely, like, I sort of want Jason Aaron to do more. I wish he was doing more Superman when I think he's only doing these three issues, right? Like, I feel like he does so well when he can really put some stakes down and dig in and build some stuff. This was fun, but I want to see more.
Well, you know, he's He's going to be doing a lot more on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, so get ready for that, all right?
You think Joker will be there in Superman?
No. So this issue was awesome. Some really great covers, but it was really stressful for me to watch Superman kind of like punch himself and wrestle with this whole kind of bizarro thing. I think that there were some really amazing artistic panels here. But the Joker really freaked me out. Having Joker be the sane one, it was irking me. Like, I couldn't deal with it. And I think it's also why Bizarro kind of stresses me out. I don't know, something about the language or the tone of it really just has an unease.
I feel like it's really, like, just bizarre, you know?
Oh, that's an interesting word.
It's a little bit of a joke, if you will.
Anyways, I'm excited to read more Action Comics, and I thought this was very creepy and enjoyable.
Great. They're done with it, though, so there you go.
Done with Action Comics? You think they're done with Action Comics?
Closing up shop.
Turn off the lights on the way out. Avengers Twilight, talking about turning off lights.
Wait, just to be clear, your little bloop was you were turning off your bat cave light, right? That's what that was? That little...
No, he pressed the button that puts you back in a coma.
Avengers Twilight number 4 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Daniel Acuna. In this issue, these reformed Avengers have been attacking the raft to try to free Tony Stark's head, and they go on a new mission.
Got that head.
Everything literally does come to a head in this issue as our villain is revealed and we're heading towards the final fight here. Justin, what did you think about this?
I've been liking this. You know, it's really stuck with me. I think something that you said last time we talked about this, Alex, that Tom Brevoort said this was his like favorite Avengers story of all time or something, or like up there in the canon.
Yeah, it was the third issue in particular, but he was very excited about the series.
And that's stuck with me because I do think this is good. That's a wild standard to set. But I do like the way that Chip Zdarsky is really like picking particular character traits and really pushing them forward for each of these. It's just a very well calculated story. And so the fact that we get the villain reveal and it's exactly who you might expect, you know, doesn't really have a lot of surprise twist factor to it, but everything in this issue is just really well executed, and I've been enjoying the series as a whole.
Yeah, I think the art is really amazing. It has almost like a cool painting kind of feel to it, but it is pretty dark though. So sometimes it's a little bit harder to see, but great action and story. I have a question. Was that last panel the Red Skull as Iron Man?
So the villain in the book is the Red Skull, who is kind of teaming up with Ultron. I think the idea here is it's Red Skull wearing Iron Man armor with Ultron as the AI backing him up.
Yeah, sort of the Jarvis.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah,
but bummer for Ultron to get downgraded to suit.
Yeah.
Yes.
The chatty suit.
Yes.
Maybe that'll come into play.
We'll see. House of Slaughter, number 21 from Boob Studios, written by Tate Bromble, art by Antonio Fuso. We are continuing to follow Boucher, one of the elements.
Nice.
Didn't know what we were doing here.
Yeah, from the House of Slaughter. Some big things are going down here as we're continuing to build up this world. I thought this is a badass issue that is really building up some interesting conflict in the various houses, something that's always bubbling in the background, but we're starting to see really come to a head. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I really thought this was a badass issue. I almost wish we had stray bullets to talk to some of the New Orleans stuff with them about. But I really thought that this had some like epic panels here, especially when we're going after that monster alligator thing. But yeah, I'm excited to see what's to come. This issue really leaves you with like what's going to happen next in an exciting way. So I love the pace of these books and the art style. So I'm excited to read more.
Yeah, I mean, this has just been like, I know this is the beginning of this arc, but it's really been a long run to get to this, the Butcher's War. We followed this Butcher character throughout. We've really seen it all. We've been on this emotional journey. And this feels like it's going to be just payoff after payoff in this. Mm-hmm. And that's really exciting. If you're a fan of Something's Killing the Children, I've actually enjoyed House of Slaughter more than the flagship book.
Hot take.
At points.
Why, that's spicier than the jambalaya they serve in New Orleans.
Wow, look at this guy, the human lonely planet over here, just dropping some very top-tier
knowledge. Deep-cut knowledge about the city. Yeah. Dark Ride, number 11 from Image Comics.
I guess Justin was Joshua. Done.
What?
I'm good. Yeah, I've said enough. Butcher.
Butcher. What do you want,
Peter? I actually have one other thing to say.
It seemed like he was mid-sentence and you cut him off was my point.
I have something to say. Back in Batman Dylan Dog, isn't it weird that Groucho Marx is like the sidekick?
That is weird.
I can't believe we didn't talk about that. And I just want to say that is unexplained and just like, and it made me think because Dylan Dog is like an Italian comics character. Mm-hmm. And is it just like, yeah, we just did. He's his Alfred. It's fine. And I was like, is he a clone? Is he just like a guy? Is
I'm
it
glad
actually
you
Groucho
brought
Mark?
This up because speaking of Batman, back at the Oscars, wasn't it weird how everyone knew that, Batman wasn't wearing his mask, but both villains knew who Batman was sitting right there in the audience. You know what I mean? I mean, I got to give it to him. He was like, bring it. I'm not scared of you. But it was still kind of crazy that they were just very casual about it.
Yeah. I mean, that reminds me of in Batman Returns, isn't right. it weird that he uses penguins to try to blow up the city? That seems like an inefficient way of doing that. And in general, to control penguins feels like a big lift, even if you've lived with them your entire life.
Well, you got to go with what you know. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to just turn to humans all of a sudden and try to communicate with them. I mean, your penguins are your boys.
I almost never turn to humans. Isn't it weird that we met like 18 years ago and we're life partners now? Life partners.
Dark Ride, number
Dark
11.
Ride number 11.
From Image Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Andre Bresson.
We're on a dark ride.
Really getting to it now as our evil satanic theme park introduces a new attraction at the end that seems apocalyptic potentially for the entire world, as well as the main family that we've been following. This has gotten some wild directions over the course of this book. Seems like they're heading towards an end point, and I'm really curious to see what that is.
Yeah, and like it's a lot of Joshua Williamson's books, I'm a fan of at least, and this one feels like it's dealing very specifically with regret. Like, it feels like there is no real, like, pure hero here. It feels like it's a lot of figuring out what is making us suffer as people, these characters are. And I really, it's such a specific theme, not one I would necessarily attach to a horror amusement park book. But I love the specificity, and I've enjoyed this book. I'm going to be sad to see it go. I thought it was going to be longer, and it seems to be wrapping up next issue.
Yeah, that is sad. Although this has been a total nightmare of a book for me. But the art is fantastic, but the puppetry also really freaks me the fuck out.
Fall of the House of X, number 3 for Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Lucas Wernick and Jethro Morales.
The Dugs.
This is all good.
In this issue, the X-Men are fighting back in a big way against Orcus. We are following up on a bunch of plot lines that have been left behind. Prophecy from Destiny and other folks. We had Jerry Duggan on the show the last week.
So we should have talked to him about this.
We didn't. We didn't talk to him about this issue.
No, that's too bad.
No, we actually had a lovely conversation about the X universe and all of his work in it. So definitely check that out if you haven't listened to it.
Yes. Oh, but cool. I thought this issue was great. I can't believe how much the X-Men are winning in this issue, and it's just making me more and more nervous as we go.
I had that same feeling throughout. Just like, oh, this is too many W's here. The fact that slight spoiler here, the fact that Firestar is currently still alive, I was like, oh no, it's all wins here. So that was worrisome. I love the White Queen in this. I love the way that spun out Firestar. Cyclops has some nice moments. There's a great twist, like a literal twist of a person's body in this that I thought was just very well done, super dramatic and visually done, and genuinely sad despite the nature of the character. I love the way this is sort of all coming together on all fronts.
It's kind of weird that somebody twisted somebody else's head and you thought, well done. I still don't know the scope of everything that is happening, but from what little I can piece together about what I care about, it was fun to see Emma Frost, really give Mr. Sinister a heart attack, and Cyclops trying to kill Nimrod. So those things were exciting.
Do you think someday that we'll give you a heart attack in that same way?
Here's hoping.
I think there is a non-zero chance that one of us dies during a podcast, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think so.
We spent so much time casting, I would assume one of us would have to go.
Odds, physically, the odds. Yeah,
what would you guys do? Like, let's say I had a heart attack and died in the middle of this podcast. Would you finish?
Well, no, happened to me. There was one time where I was choking and I fell over in a corner and you guys just kept going. I don't know if you remember that. Yeah, I for a second I thought I was really in trouble and fell over.
What were you choking on? Why were you eating while you were talking?
I don't know if I was drinking something. Yeah, I that's what it was. I was drinking something and then it just kind of like went down the wrong tube and I fell
over. Got like a Mountain Dew hairball situation.
Yeah.
I mean, I think when it happens, I'll just make sure I tell the doctors to turn off those machines I'm podcasting. Unplug me.
We don't want my mic.
Yeah.
One of the primary things about our podcast is our fidelity to audio.
Truth.
Green Lantern number nine from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams and Sam Humphries, art by Zermonico and Yasmin Flores Montanez. This is a big issue because we're getting a bunch of retconny stuff going around as we delve into Hal Jordan's new powers. We find out, spoilers here, there's a power battery that has been hidden on Earth this entire time. That's why there's so many Green Lanterns from Earth. Hal Jordan gets his powers back, but there's still a bunch of mysteries and things going down. I like this run. This was definitely a deep dive into continuity. Maybe a little bit of a too deep dive for me, but I still like the things they're doing in this book.
I agree. Like, this felt very much like a number one issue, sort of, in a way that I was like, oh, it's a little early in the run to be just resetting everything and reiterating everything. But I liked the end, obviously, the character that we see at the end of this issue. And I like the backup focusing on Jessica Cruz, a Green Lantern that, when she was introduced, was a big deal, and I feel like has become a little bit left out of the main sort of continuity. How would you, in this issue, Hal Jordan encounters a childhood friend or his friend from his youth. How would you feel, Pete, if you ran into the unseen vegan dream and he was like, I'm here to usher you?
Well, that's happens. It happens because he is the unseen vegan dream. He randomly shows up places. That's how you deal with that guy.
Then he's seen. This is a friend of Pete's, and that's his name.
Yeah. I remember I was in my local bodega in Queens, and he was in the soup aisle. And I was like, the unseen
the
vegan dream?
Soup aisle?
You got a soup aisle? That's awesome.
Yeah. Wow. Anyways,
a lot of soup.
A whole aisle. What? Anyways,
it sounds like you were having a dream.
Yeah. But yeah, I think this is nice when your friend shows up and you just walk to Earth together and discovery batteries and different things to charge.
I would love to discover some old batteries, some D batteries. Imagine bumping into those.
D? Yeah. I also
like oil cans.
20. Anyways, I just think that, I was excited with who shows up at the end, and hopefully that means more of that person moving forward.
Blue Book, 1947, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Michael Avon Oeming. As usual with this book, it is exploring real UFO mysteries. Justin, I'd love to hear from you, just because apparently this is challenging your perception about what exists and what doesn't.
I said this on the live show, but this book is so good. It really, I've never been a believer in like UFO sightings. I've never been a believer, but this makes me really get into JB's back catalog, Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
I know this really makes me like deeply interested in these stories of UFO encounters. They're so well told. James Tynion, Michael Avon Oeming on the art. Like, it's just great. They're super engaging. The fact that they are like grounded in actual history and journalism, super interesting. This is just a fun, differently toned book to pick up.
Yeah, I agree. And the blue tone does really make it kind of stand out, which is really kind of not only kind of beautiful, but eerie in such a cool way. And then the other story that's black and white is also great. I'm the only one who is a real believer on this podcast. So I think these are all very interesting and very cool.
Describe to us the when the probe went in.
I don't believe in that kind of things, but I do think
the probe, when he was abducted.
Yeah, he thinks I was abducted or anything like that.
Well, you said you believed, I assume.
I believe, yes, but I have no firsthand experience or secondhand experience. I just believe.
Should we tell him?
Yeah.
That point you were talking about earlier when you were choking on the podcast, that's because you were being probed. We have physical evidence of this happening.
Yeah, via video and audio.
Yeah. Oh, God.
The audio, honestly, the audio is a little bit low quality, but the video is really good.
It's pristine. It shows aliens on the video. It's wild that we haven't made a bigger deal.
How do you not believe after that, Justin?
Yeah, we should release that.
How do we not believe? Because I don't know. They were sort of fucking around. They were probing you. They were reading your comics. They seem a little sus.
Guys, we're trying to talk about Batman.
I'm glad
Superman
they stopped
vampires and werewolves here. Could you please stop?
And the weird thing is they were recording an alien podcast about like probing you. I was like, their thing. It felt like a little bit exploitive.
Yeah. Most of the time they were doing their Blue Apron ad. It was very distracting.
Hey, if you're going to probe a human, use this Blue Apron probe. It's hand delivered to your ship.
You get hungry when you're probing a human. Blue.
Excuse me. The immortal photon.
Alex is about to get probed.
Oh, get probed.
Uh-oh. That's a probing. The Immortal Thor number 8 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Ibrahim.
Uh-oh.
It's hard to talk when you got stuff going up your butt.
That's always true on our podcast. Anytime we make a mistake, because there's butt stuff happening. So behind the scenes.
It's not the hole that's getting filled, Pete. Ibra Roberson, in this issue, Thor is confronting his mother, Gaia, who seems to have gone under a similar gross transformation to the other gods in the pantheon. He's trying to find out a little bit more about who's behind it, and by the end, he does. What'd you guys think about this? What'd you think?
The whole Gaia thing, I was like, Gaia is Thor's mom? That's not something.
I love that. Why is that the thing they keep retconning? Like, this is not, mind you, for this issue. They've already done it. But they went from being like, oh, Thor's mom isn't Freya, it's the Phoenix. And they're like, yeah. It's not the Phoenix, it's Gaia. I don't know why that needs to be a thing.
I agree. The whole thing, that was in my brain a lot. Because the Phoenix one, I was like, oh, I remember when that happened. Cool. But then to move now to a whole different thing that doesn't seem to be doing it. I mean, it feels like Al Ewing is just doing something completely different here across the board. And there's a lot of like deep, freshly like cemented continuity happening here with like Utgard Loki and Utgard Thor being like a thing. I feel like I want to get to this, the meta comic book thing. Mm-hmm. And I guess we do at the end of this issue. So that's what I want to be doing. And I'm glad we're there.
Yeah, I think we get to an interesting place. But I thought Mother Earth Swamp Thing was cool. And, you know, I miss Renee Zellweger for sure. But that wasn't. Oh, my God. I can't believe I'm blanking on the actress who played Thor's mom. Renee Russo.
The idea that you would just out of nowhere be like, I miss Renee Zellweger is also fun.
I thought you were talking Renee Zellweger played like a swamp monster at some point.
No.
I mean, she certainly looked like one in the Bridget
but
Jones
I
series.
Think it's super clear that Thor got a meeting at Roxxon, so everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, he's pitching.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's pitching. He's pitching that Our Bones Dust, number 4 from Image Comics by Ben Stenbeck. This is the final issue of the series about an AI that teamed up with a little cannibal. Not a cannibal, but a friend, I guess
an enemy of cannibals.
Enemy of cannibals. And we're finding out a lot more about this world in this issue. Pete, I know this was one of your favorites of the week, so why don't you talk about it?
You really robbed me.
It was. Look
you
at that.
Robbed me on this one, Pete.
Yeah. Love this ish. So cool. Love the art. The different worlds, the different beings. This is so cool. Kids becoming crazy, powerful, floating pyramid stuff. Yeah, I just think that this is just kind of has this epic fantasy kind of thing that reminds me of Miyazaki stuff a little bit. Mm. But just amazing splash panels, just like really powerful stuff. I love everything about this comic. It's just so creative and cool and different, but not too different. You know what I mean? It's just enjoyable.
I mean, we read a lot of post-apocalyptic stories, but this
sure
one just
do,
has
buddy.
Such a nice tone to it with, like, the, you know, Walking Dead style, like, everyone's awful. But at the same time, we have these, like, sort of AI aliens that are there that are being funny and a little flip in a way that I hadn't seen before. Just a nice combination of elements with great art, like the way it ended. Really enjoyed this series. Pick it up I'm assuming it's going to be released as a collection. Definitely pick that up when it comes out.
I really hope there's more of this because, like you guys are saying, this was a beautiful book, and it felt like they introduced so many twists to the mythology in this last issue. I want to see more. I think there's more to say. Outsiders, number 5 from DC Comics, written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly. Art by Robert Carey. In this issue, our team of archaeologists are heading, or more specifically, Luke Fox and Batwoman, I guess the drummer's there as well, actually, head to a convocation of all the hideous, horrifying monsters of the DC universe, all the villains. Maybe this was my favorite issue of this so far. I thought this was a really interesting situation to throw these characters in. I think the team did a good job of pushing Batman, Luke Fox, and the drummer, and the overarching mystery of whatever the drummer is doing in the background while Luke Fox and Batwoman are doing their thing is very interesting to me. So I like this quite a bit. What did you guys think?
I do, too. The idea that you have all of these horror characters in the DC universe having like a sort of an in-person OnlyFans meetup was like a funny thing and a well done thing. And I like that we get into like some emotional core elements of each of the characters as they move through this on their own separate journeys. Very curious what the drummer's up to. This series continues to be just super interesting. Great art. I like these characters. It's definitely one of the more mystery box issues on the stands right now.
Yeah. I agree with that. Fun cover. It's got this kind of creepy Halloween tone to it, which is really cool. The scary AF kid in this called The End just freaks me the fuck out, man. And I can't get over him, nor can I get him out of my head. So having a hard time over here.
Great baby name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hold on to that.
We were actually going to name my son The End, and we...
That makes sense.
Didn't end up going for that.
Ah, bummer. Remember at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. We went for Once Upon a Time. Wolverine, number 45 from Marvel, written by Victor Laval and Benjamin Percy, art by Jeff Shaw. We are continuing the Sabretooth War storyline as Sabretooths are rebelling against our main Sabretooth. Meanwhile, Wolverines and X-Force are trying to fight back against all of this. So this very much feels like a chess pieces issue as we move everybody around, but still lots of gross stuff happening. So there you go.
Yeah, agreed. It's, you know, continues to be a Wolverine versus Sabes and cool art. Sabes. But we'll see what goes down next issue.
You know, when this was, we saw that this was going to be 10 issues, I was like, how are they going to keep this up? And they really are doing a good job of keeping the story moving. I really like Quentin Quire in this issue. This role is very fun to have him just be a head in a box who is trying to help.
Head in a box.
Mm-hmm. Help his former teammates at the same time being forced to help Sabretooth. And getting more, we're setting up in the next issue some classic Wolverine Sabretooth partnership. Exploring that, I think, is cool.
And ultimately, it's just fun to see non-space, non-ground Wolverine do stuff, you know?
Yeah. That's what, sure, I call him, is not ground Wolverine.
Dark Spaces Dungeon, number 4 from IDW, written by Scott Snyder, art by Hayden Sherman. We're getting towards the end here as our investigators look into a dude that is trapping people in horrific dungeons. Justin, you're a fan of this, and you're a fan of trapping people in dungeons, so why don't you take it away?
I feel seen, you know?
Yeah.
I got my dungeon. This book's about dungeon guys. I hope I don't get caught, like I assume our dungeon guy's going to get caught next issue. This is tense and scary all the time. Scott Snyder telling us a story where we're just following the heroes trying to solve a mystery, but it just feels like they're always losing in a way that adds so much dread and tension. It's really smartly done. The art's great. I don't know Hayden Sherman very well, and I think this art is like super evocative. The just great character work and face work for all these different people. Really excited to see if this ends next issue. I'm mm-hmm. excited to see how it comes together. A 5-issue series, yes, to be concluded. 5-issue series.
Man, Justin, get out of my head. I also have written down here intense and scary. All I'm saying if somebody disappeared down some kind of secret trap door underground tunnel thing, I wouldn't follow. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't go?
Yeah, I would not go. I'd wait for him up here.
You're not going to do well going into my cheese cave or tequila bathroom.
neither of those things appeal to me. This had a little bit of True Detective feel to it with those underground tunnel things. I had flashbacks to when I was reading this. But also really fantastic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles ads in the back of this. So super pumped for what's coming next.
I wish we could talk about that book.
Before we get to the next issue, though, I just wanted to ask Justin, is that Patron in your toilet, or what was that?
Yeah, it's a very expensive flushing mechanism that I have. It's just pure Patron going down. Because I'm going to be honest, not great tequila. It's expensive at the bar. It's not that good, so we just use it for flushing.
Mm-hmm. And it's a bidet, right? So it sprays a little.
Yeah, I go to the bathroom, I walk out wasted.
Fish
butt
flies.
Chugging.
Fish, you like this, Pete? Fish flies number 5. You liked it on that footage that we had.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Fish flies when those, number. When those aliens and you did all that butt chugging. Those aliens. You mentioned earlier, Alex, about really adding a lot of continuity. We're adding a lot of continuity too, at the same time.
Fish Flies number 5.
You can't do that, Pete.
By Jeff Lemire and Image Comics. I tell you what, this is another great issue. We get a lot of more info on the characters here. They break out of the house, but the bug then disappears, which is super sad. I love this comic. I love the world it creates. It's creepy, but awesome, and icky, but amazing. More, please. Can't wait for more.
I was going to say it was actually kind of relaxing to have Pete introduce the comic book, but then not actually introduce it or set up the concept was very stressful to me.
Oh, yeah, what a twist.
Yes. So this is following a young girl who is teaming up with not an ex-con, but a con who has been turned into a giant bug. We're getting a lot of weird mythology per Jeff Lemire as usual in this issue, as we have various folks in the town investigating it at the same time as the girl and the bug are teaming up to get away. This is a lovely, dreamlike book that hails back to previous stories from Jeff Lemire, like the Essex County books, and yeah, a little bit Sweet Tooth, though it's very different from that. So if you're missing those books at all, this is a great one to check out.
Across the board. I'm curious what the larger mythology is going to say. I didn't expect that in this, and the fact that we're getting a little bit more here is really interesting. Sort of a twist for me.
Sinister Sons, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Peter J. Tomasi, art by Vasco Churchev.
Gotcha. Busted.
And David LaFuente. We are at the end of the last issue, we saw the son of Sinestro, the son of Zod, came face to face. You could probably guess what happens in this issue. They fight and then are forced to team up. But tell you what, fun with some gorgeous art.
Yeah, agree. Like the Vasco Georgiev and David LaFuente art is so fun. It does remind me of Super Sons, but it is even a little bit more cartoony, I think, that actually helps since these are two sort of brattier versions of those characters. I just hope they're going to figure their stuff out, you know?
Yeah, this is amazing art. They're still kind of figuring things out and fighting, which is a little disappointing, but I'm sure eventually they'll start to work things out or find a nice something. But yeah, I really enjoy the art style. In the classic scenario, you're going to get trapped in a space whale. So, you might see that coming a little bit, but still very enjoyable book.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I saw that coming.
Space whale. Yeah, classic.
It's about time for a space whale.
Should we move on to another book with a space whale? Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 149 from IDW.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Sophie Campbell, art by Vincenzo Federici. If you love the classic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon series, here's a book that includes some of those characters going on a multiversal adventure to stop a giant space whale from eating them.
Do you
hate
this?
Thing standing in their way is a baboon. I really like the art in this book. I don't know what's going on. It is so complicated.
Well, it's number 149.
I know that. And I know next issue is the last issue. So I get that. But every comic is somebody's first comic, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Deep, bro.
This would be a tough first read, I would say. I did like when the guy just pulls jeans out of Lita.
Yeah, pulling jeans.
Pulling jeans. Or I guess it's not even, it's Q&A, not even DNA. In general, this is, very complicated, but I do like it. I like the audacity of this being this way. So I'm very curious for this final issue, what's going to, how this will ever wrap up.
Yeah, I mean, this is very busy. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of characters.
Oh, here we go. You railed on me, but you agree.
I don't agree with anything you say. I just say there's a lot going on. I wasn't.
And you love that? That is a positive comment that you're giving right now? Interesting.
I am having a great time. I also thought they did a really cool job with the facial expressions and all the stuff, especially when they were pulling stuff out of people. And I can't wait to see what happens next.
Sorry, the biker mouse has his gun to his Beat's head again.
Last but not least, yes. I Hate Fairyland, number 12 from Image Comics, written by Scotty Young, art by Brett Bean. This is kind of a one-and-done issue.
But as we get an adventure
where Gert kind of doesn't show up, and then, spoiler, she does.
And big time
does. She's been here the whole time. She was a fucking billy goat.
A riff on the story of the three billy goats. Gruff, Pete, you love that story, right?
Sure. No, I just love this comic. It's really impressive.
Well, you used to live under a bridge where a bunch of goats would go across, and you were constantly trying to eat them.
If anyone is a troll on this podcast, it's you, bro. Not me.
Yeah, and I will say, Pete, you definitely have billy goat qualities.
Yeah, I have billy goat qualities. I do look like I live under a bridge, but I'm not a troll.
Nice. Way to draw that line. What a fine line to draw. Hey, how dare you insult me? I look like a troll, but I don't actually live under a bridge.
Well, I don't act like a troll. That's what I was trying to, the important part there.
But you do live under a bridge.
Nope. I looked like I could.
But you were in the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and you wrote the song Under the Bridge.
Nope, not that either. I have the appetite of a billy goat, though.
Mm. You eat cans?
And you eat garbage.
All right, you fuckers, let's wrap this the fuck up, all right? This is a great issue.
I have a loose 15.
Art is un-effin-believable, worth it for the art alone. This continues to be hilarious, silly, fun storytelling in a fun fairy tale setting. It's absolutely worth checking out.
I did also enjoy this issue. I like when I Hate Fairyland does like very specific, clean storytelling. That's what's happening here. Very fun.
There you go. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Yeah. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or not Stitcher, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Stay wind horny out there when you're butt chugging.
Wind horny? That blows your mind.